You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Kia ora, Alan. We've got some good stuff coming up today, eh? How are you going?
We shall see. I'm doing great. I'm loving this weather. You're right. The weather is fabulous, and long may this continue. It's almost April.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think that with like flooding going on in the country, we have been quite lucky considering how atrocious it can be, as we've seen.
No, very true, very true.
How are you enjoying the semester so far?
Oh, ask my students. There you go.
So staring at a grid of empty faces on Zoom, hey?
Oh, dear. Teams for us, actually, but yes, yeah. I'm not a fan of this online teaching lark. So hopefully we're going to be back after mid-semester break in person.
Yeah, but
both universities,
then,
I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. If you are listening at the moment and you are in someone's class, make sure to turn on your camera, on your webcam, because people like Alan would really appreciate it.
It just makes it that much more interesting, really. Really and honestly.
Yeah, we'd love to see your beautiful faces. So, our first story for today is quite cool. Basically...
no pun intended. We'll get to that.
Yeah, basically, with the war in Ukraine at the moment, now there are helium shortages, which you'd think that that's not really a related or two related concepts, eh? But helium is... there's a current shortage of that.
Yeah, and helium's pretty darn important, actually, for reasons that we will see. But yeah, you're right, there is a helium shortage now, and it does involve Russia, and Russia is one of the big helium producers on the planet, owing to the fact that they have got a lot of natural gas reserves, and so helium tends to be found with natural gas as well. And they were all set last year to put this new plant online and deliver helium to the West and everything. And then they had a couple of fires late last year and one in January, I believe. And now we've got this stupid war. And so the net result of that is that there is a big helium shortage. And to exacerbate this, Algeria is also another big helium producer. And the way that you normally get helium is as a byproduct of compressing natural gas, and you can get liquid helium out that way. And countries generally compress their natural gas because it turns it into a liquid, which makes it easier and cheaper to transport, unless you've got a pipeline. And so Algeria apparently have just opened this pipeline that goes through to Spain. And so they don't have to compress their natural gas anymore, which means that they're not busy recovering helium and stuff. And that's not good. Now, helium, obviously, it's a naturally occurring element on Earth. But the problem with it is that it's so damn light that it's not affected by the Earth's gravity. And so it just goes up through the atmosphere and it's lost into space. So any time that you fill up a helium balloon or anything like that, maybe think twice, maybe, because helium's really, really important in scientific instruments. And the reason for that is it keeps things cold, like very, very cold, like 4 degrees above absolute zero cold,
oh my goodness,
which is minus 269 degrees Celsius. And the reason that keeps things cold is because at that temperature, certain materials can superconduct, which means that you can run a current through a superconducting wire and you lose nothing. There's no resistance in that wire, so you don't lose anything as heat. So that current just keeps going on by itself forever and ever, amen, as long as you keep it at minus 269 degrees Celsius. So this is really important in MRI machines, for example. They use superconducting magnets. NMR machines in universities and all sorts of commercial laboratories. Maglev trains, so there's one of those under construction in Japan. So magnetic levitation, that's, you know, and they travel at like 500 kilometers an hour or whatever. So that's a problem as well. And it's not good. And even weather balloons, the National Weather Service in the US, because of the fact that helium's in short supply, they're only going to launch one weather balloon a day rather than two now, because they're all full of helium. The other option is for them to use hydrogen, but as we all know, hydrogen is horribly inflammable, and the National Weather Service are based at a university in Florida, and so they can't really have this big ball of hydrogen floating around. So it's not good, folks. So Yeah, think twice at your next kiddie's party or whatever, and you know, maybe just maybe just cut down on those helium balloons, because it really is a finite resource, and the price is going up and up and up. So yeah, yeah, something to be aware of, I guess.
So is it just kind of a matter of lack of supply and like no alternatives to kind of collect this in a more efficient way?
Yeah, that's the thing. And again, you know, it's got to, it has to make money for the people who are doing it, and you know, seemingly that's not the case at the moment. The US have got an enormous sort of supply, or just they keep a lot of it anyway, but they are privatizing that, I believe, and that's probably not going to be for the best either. So, So they hold a lot of reserves, but it's just not good, and it really could be it could be quite bad, in fact, you know, just with all the scientific and medical instruments that rely on it. So you know, spare a thought, folks.
So no more helium balloons on
no more
party.
Inhaling helium, you know.
Even if that's your favorite pastime. So none of that, and no weather balloons, and no magnetic trains, which it seems like we're going backwards, isn't it? Our second topic for today is, I don't know, if this might be a little bit confronting to you, feel free to tune out, but pretty much if you find everyone else around you boring, this might actually be your fault. So, I don't know. Do you have your friends kind of just constantly complaining to you about people that you find, that they find boring?
This is a really weird one, and I've sort of read this a few times, and I sort of find something different every time I sort of go through it. And so this is a psychology study from the University of Essex psychology department, and they claim to have found the most boring people, basically. So the most boring people doing the most boring jobs, living in the most boring places, et cetera, et cetera. And this was published in a journal called Psychology and Social Psychology Bulletin just last week or the week before. And you know, it's garnered huge, huge news all around the world. Kind of unfortunately, I think. Well, I don't know. See what you think. So, you know, cut to the chase, the most boring the most boring jobs that people can have. Here we are, the most boring jobs, folks. This is scientifically proven, apparently. Data analysis, accounting, tax, insurance, cleaning, and banking. Okay, so there you go. If you're one of those, I apologize, but this is what they found.
That's, and this is scientific.
dare I say that this is psychology? I'll probably get shot if I say something like that, and then you know. But okay, the most boring hobbies that people have: sleeping. I didn't know sleeping was a hobby. I thought it was kind of, you know, you had to do it. Religion, watching TV, bird watching, smoking, observing animals, and mathematics.
Oh, this is certainly confronting.
So why did they do, or how did they do this first? Well, I stress that this is all opinion. So they recruited, I think, a couple of hundred people in the States, and they seemingly just sort of asked them what they thought boring attributes for people were, and what boring jobs for people were, and where boring people might be found, and all of these things. So it's really nothing more than a collation of people's prejudices, maybe. I reckon. And that's why it sort of has surprised me that it's got as much airtime as it has. And here I go again. I mean, this is, you know, yes, I know. But so they, like, for example, the most common attributes of boring people, supposedly they're reserved, they're bad conversationalists, they're inactive, their physical appearance counts, seemingly. You can tell if somebody's boring from their physical appearance, and they're self-centered. And they even went to the extent of saying, right, how much would you have to be paid to spend a decent amount of time with a boring person? And the answer is, apparently, $250 for a week with a really boring person, or $80 for a not quite so boring person.
And $250 would cover rent as well. So I'm just trying to think, is this is worth it?
But, I mean, my question is, what's the point of all this, really? You know, this is clickbait. Absolutely it is. I mean, you see this story anywhere, you're gonna read this and find out, you know, who the most boring people in the world are. But is it really science?
I don't know if it's science, but based on the fact that it is kind of based on human opinion,
yes.
Isn't boringness already inherently based on opinion anyway?
Well, yeah, no, it is. I mean, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder and all of that. It is. It's extraordinarily subjective. And one person's boring person is another person's, you know, really interesting
person. Yeah, you might have two accountants falling in love. They both find themselves.
I did not say that, folks. That was
the most interesting people alive.
Let's keep the stereotype going. Yeah.
Let's move on before we get sued
offend any
by,
more people.
Yeah, by an accountant. Our last topic for today. So if you consider space boring, maybe tune out of this one as well. But basically, research has come up with a hypothetical that suggests that Mercury's crust, the planet, may be studded with diamonds.
Amen. Yes. So this is a guy, Kevin Cannon, who's at the Colorado School of Mines. Mm. And so he presented this at a conference recently. And so basically he is saying, right, what do we know about Mercury? We know a bit about Mercury. We haven't sort of been there too many times. Mm-hmm. But what is theorized is that Mercury has got a lot of graphite in its crust. Okay, so graphite's one of the two stable forms of carbon. Okay, so you've got graphite and you've got diamond. Which one's the stable one? There you go, Christina. There's a question for you. Graphite or diamond? Which one's the stable one?
Crazy, I imagine.
No.
Imagine being...
No, yeah. Well, it's not diamond. Diamond's unstable. Mm. Graphite's stable. Diamond's unstable.
Wow.
So if you've got a diamond ring on your finger, it's slowly turning into graphite.
Yes, subtly.
But the one way of making diamonds is to get graphite and compress it an awful lot. And so this guy's saying, right, Mercury's got a hell of a lot of craters all over it. These are big, big, big impacts. If you've got a lot of graphite in the crust and these big, 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 big impacts, then chances are you're turning graphite into diamond every time you have one of these big, big, big impacts. Oh. So that's sort of the theory behind it. And he reckons that you might, on Mercury, have around about 16 times the Earth's reserves of diamonds, which is pretty good for a planet that's only the size of our moon. So this is all sort of computer simulation and stuff. And you know, he's just basically throwing it out there. And we won't know until a space probe called the BepiColombo mission reaches Mercury in 2025. And then they will be equipped with all of the correct scientific instruments to be able to figure out whether he's right or not. So, you know, in the meantime, Mercury might be full of diamonds. I don't think they're going to be economic to mine, though, would be my...
I would imagine
final word space, on the matter there. Yeah.
The cost of space missions may like outweigh the.
I think so. I think you're absolutely right, Christina. Yeah.
I've just got a couple of texts in at the moment. The first one says stopping birthday balloons is not a bad thing, which is fair enough. I don't think that one's that controversial, unless you are a big fan of balloons, in which case I apologise. Someone's said winner of the most boring research paper ever may be the topic, the boring people study. So it's a bit of irony for your Tuesday afternoon. And someone said, this is boring. So.
Well, but I have to add, the most exciting or the most non-boring professions, number two was scientist and number three was journalist. You know, science journalism.
Oh,
there we
goodness.
Go. Look, you can't
us.
Get more exciting than science journalism.
We make up two-thirds of the three most exciting
there you
professions.
Go. Absolutely.
So that's good stuff.
Yeah, all good.
Cool. Well, that's Dear Science for today. Thank you very much for coming in, Alan.
Always a pleasure, Christina.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B-card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.